Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein with another conversation. Today we have Sohrab Ahmari, who is the op-ed editor at the New York Post. He's the author of From Fire by Water, My Journey to the Catholic Faith with Ignatius Press. He tells me he has another book on the way, which really poses questions that Western culture has stopped asking. And he's here with us today. He wrote the piece last week that has evoked so much discussion, controversy, on David Frenchism, did that on the First Things website. So that will be sort of maybe a springboard, but we'll go into some of the broader picture. Welcome, Sohrab.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. The piece that you did last week has, I mean, everyone is commenting on this in the New York Times. Everyone seems to want to weigh in on this issue. And I'm going to start with a very small impetus that had to do with these events that pop up in libraries that are getting some press. They are the drag queen reading events.
Well, Michelle Goldberg in the New York Times has a piece today that focuses on that, because it's true that what launched me into writing first a series of tweets and then eventually this much discussed essay for First Things, which uses David French, who's a very honorable man, has done tremendous work for religious liberty and campus free speech, but I used him as a kind of emblem of a kind of conservatism that doesn't pay enough attention to these kinds of things and is impotent in the face of them. So I happen to live right next to a drag bar, like a drag, you know, it's a place where, you know, women having their bachelorette parties often will come and I'll have them at this. So clearly that, obviously, I'm not up in arms about that. You know, drag is a very, very old tradition. It's been with us for a long time. But that's one thing. But to have drag, which is unquestionably a sexualized form of performance, with undercurrents of what, you know, psychologists call transvestic fetishism, to bring that into a library, to direct it specifically at children, is, I think, the kind of thing that conservatives should be up in arms about, and that it should trigger our defense mechanisms. I say this again, I have a 2-year-old son, I have another child on the way, and we live next to it, as I said, a drag bar. But I understand that as that's a thing that's there, it's been there for a long time, whereas the library, the public library, is an encroachment. And I'm not a legal strategist, but my bottom line is, this is the kind of thing that not just conservatives, but I think a lot of people across the country are nervous about, but they because of the sort of cultural hegemony of the left, aren't willing to say anything about it. And I suggested that a kind of David Frenchism wouldn't tackle it. As it happened, after all the, you know, after I wrote my essay and after numerous think pieces came out and so on and so forth, someone asked the actual David French, well, what would you do about drag queen story hour? And he said, well, first of all, it would encroach on local control over libraries to try to do anything about it. Not to mention freedom of association, blah, blah, blah. So in other words, that's kind of proceduralism, that the response of the conservatives always uphold procedure, and not think about the substantive outcome,
right,
was perfectly encapsulated in the real David French's response. But again, I don't want to focus on him alone, but it was very telling that when all was said and done, he said he wouldn't really be able to do anything about it.
I think it applies to the free speech absolutists, mm-hmm, who are out there who simply find any infringement on free speech, mm-hmm, to be, well, there are always the slippery slope, mm-hmm, arguments. Slippery slope. Mm-hmm. If we squelch this, especially if conservatives are in power, who exercise somehow the state, mm-hmm, to allow something to be censored, well, then when the left gets in power, they're going to use this against us. For instance, there was a court case in a high school in which a cheerleader on the cheer team was found posting photographs on Facebook of herself holding up signs that said, you know, F school, F books, F cheer. Okay. Outright insulting the cheerleading team that she was on. And the coach said, look, you posted this out there for everyone. You're off the team. The parents sued. And I've seen conservatives say this was a violation of her free speech rights. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, what about the morale of the team? I mean, and this wasn't a private statement. It was a public statement. It was sent out and the whole school saw it. And say, and nothing? We can't do anything about that. There's no discipline the one can be enforced here. And I'm thinking that kind of proceduralism, it just opens things up to, well, can we stop anything? I mean, you know, what things, because the drag queen story hour, I mean, as you put it, this is highly sexualized. And it's critical. Okay? It is critical of male-female norms. It is critical of masculine-feminine difference. I mean, actively critical, performatively critical.
If your conservatism is merely the upholding of procedure and maximal autonomy, with harm and consent as the only limiting principles against those two forces, then you are set to, you may win XYZ legal battle over religious liberty in the courtroom, but on the thrust of the culture will sweep you away because the ideology that we're up against says, you know, not only is drag to be tolerated in the drag queen bar or whatever, which has been for a while, and as I said, I live next to one. I'm not exercised by that. But not only will it be legally tolerated, but it must be treated as normative. And for me to fully feel autonomous in my identity, you will have to acknowledge that everything I'm doing is fine and normatively okay. Or if it's a matter of when you go to the transgender thing, it's not enough that you say so-and-so has a right to surgically transition. You must say that this person was always the gender that they became, and that their old name is no longer is a taboo. It's a dead name. That's the fullest exercise of my autonomy, and it will destroy your autonomy for me to feel that autonomous. So that's why, I think this idea that Sohrab Ahmari, by challenging David Frenchism or kind of moral conservatism, is proposing, the restoration of the papal states or a kind of Catholic Sharia, all these sort of extremist labels that have been thrown at me, also reveals the limits on the conservative imagination, that there is only one configuration, and anything that suggests that we could go back to, for example, decency laws or obscenity laws must mean, you know, Vichy or Pius the Ninth or papal states. You know, there were people who were firmly in the liberal tradition. I cite Matthew Arnold in the essay, who say, yeah, liberalism, autonomy in their proper spheres, but there have to be there are other limits. There are spaces in which the moral authority of the community must override, you know, individual rights or free trade, blah, 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 you know, to be a bit pragmatic, actually. Who's the dogmatist? The one who says, in the face of Drag Queen Library Hour, if you want to do anything about it, you must want Sharia. Or the one who says, no, you know, that in its proper sphere, okay, but don't try to try to make it normative for my children.
Would you call this an excess influence from maybe the 50s forward of libertarianism in the conservative movement?
Yes, and I would also say, I mean, 1968 was probably a moment in which, let's put it this way, that a lot of the conservatives who lived through 1968 opposed its cultural effects in the years afterward, or grumbled about it, but nevertheless pursued a total deregulatory agenda in all spheres of life that was
elsewhere.
Elsewhere.
Law, economics, government policy, exactly. Foreign relations. During the 60s, it seemed to me that somehow the conservatives, they gave up, or they were pushed simply out of all the cultural spheres and the educational spheres. Mm-hmm. The universities, and then more public education in, you know, the entertainment world. I mean, they were all always liberal, mm-hmm. but there was space for conservative principles, conservative values, and ideas. And it looks to me now like the triumph of hard liberalism, maybe leftism is a better word, in those spheres has been tremendously damaging to the conservative, not just the conservative movement, but as you put it a minute ago, the conservative imagination. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see why we can't start talking about the things that you mentioned, a more religiously oriented public sphere, or bringing moral arguments against these activities. The library. Mm-hmm. I don't get the alarm mm-hmm. that they feel over this. Where does that come from?
It's a conservative frame of mind that always thinks it's one of 3 years. We're always either in 1917 or 1933, or it's 1989. In other words, either at the threshold of the October Revolution or the horrors of Nazi Germany, or it's the triumph of a particular policy mix and a particular vision against those bad things. If you look at all beyond the 1989 policy mix, you must be driving us towards 1917 and 1933. And I think it's a very limited, as you said, it's a very limited kind of imagination.
Well, when you look at their representation of, I mean, we'll call it conservative decency and civility. Mm-hmm. Are they vulnerable to an argument that says, how have you been doing? How's your record on maintaining decency and civility in the public sphere? Mm-hmm. We all agree it's gone down. Mm-hmm. My position is that the left has been assailing decency and civility in the public sphere for 60 years. Now, the right the left seems to put it all on 2016. But has the procedural conservative lost one battle after another over the public sphere on the decency grounds? Do they have any claims for victory?
I mean, they would say, we've had XYZ number of justices who've performed well or not so well, depending on the issue and depending on the justice. It would say that we've won, I suppose, culturally on the life issue, because polls suggest that actually younger generations are more likely to be pro-life.
You feel some momentum there.
As ultrasounds become more sophisticated and you see that there's a life there, I grant all that. But on the whole, the thrust has been cultural defeat, one after another. And even in those policy plays, arenas, where that's it. I mean, we lost the Obergefell.
And I look at things like, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. We've gone from that to Stephen Colbert. Mm-hmm. We have gone from the defining deviancy downward mm-hmm. process announced long ago as a warning, and it's just gone down and down and down.
And birth rates, marriage rates, divorce rates, religious affiliation. On those measures, it's all gone down. On the, you can say, well, XYZ discrete court victory, but you know, does American society feel healthy? The Atlantic just ran this piece about a teenage girl in Stockton, California, doing pornography to be able to make her rent. The school newspaper running an adulatory piece about her.
Right.
Does that feel like a society in a good place? Opioid addiction rates.
Right.
So again, it's look at the totality of substantive outcomes.
Right.
And you can't say, well, we're doing fine. We have Gorsuch. You know, we have this. I mean, I appreciate Gorsuch, but the sanguine sensibility of a certain kind of conservative that things are okay, I don't think it's there.
When we had the culture wars on college campuses in the late 80s and early 90s, mm-hmm. With Alan Bloom and Lynn Cheney, William Bennett, and others, they won that battle in the public sphere. They made the college campus appear to be often an intolerant place where mm-hmm. political correctness really was becoming coercive.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, does anyone believe that political correctness is lower now than it was then?
Yes.
In that world, they kept going.
Remember in the late 90s, you know, mainstream conservative outlets began paying attention to what someone like Judith Butler was saying.
Right.
And they would just ridicule her prose, which
That's
admittedly
right.
is ridiculous.
It is.
And they were like, okay, well, I'll make fun of him, blah, blah, blah. 20 years later, Judith Butler reigns supreme. She won.
She's the president of the Modern Language Association this year.
And her ideas are now, they suffuse the public sphere.
The Obama administration. Yeah. They loved her.
Yes. Her mode of thinking about gender as a performance and an imposition of power,
yeah.
rather than something that's linked to, first of all, biology, but also sort of who people are as men and women, that analysis is one. Celebrities will talk in her terms. They don't have her, you know, highfalutin, you know, queer theory, blah, blah, blah language, but they talk in her mode.
Yeah.
So we you know, no, we didn't win that war.
And you know, I have to say, when that, I was finishing graduate school when all the queer theory stuff and LGBT was coming out, and it really caught on. In the early 90s, in the humanities, when I was there, I was liberal back then. I kind of said, "Okay, well, you know, whatever. I'm not part of that, mm-hmm. but it's okay." They have their own little thing. Mm-hmm. They were a little group, and I thought no one's going to pay attention to them. Boy, was I wrong. I mean, I was way off on that, and it tells me what happens on college campuses is going to happen in society. You know, 15, 20 years later,
because that's where elites are trained.
So they're going to come through. That's right. Now, I think you see that impact of the 90s, post-1990 humanities mm-hmm. in young journalists, young people in government, mm-hmm. Young people going into the not-for-profit institutions. They have gone through an identity humanities, mm-hmm. Not through a tradition-based mm-hmm. humanities. And conservatives, we got to say, boy, did we lost that one real badly. And so I look at, I like David French, and I like, you know, a lot of people on sort of the more conservative decency side, but I keep having to say, look at the last 30 years. I mean, is this working out? Okay, are these, if we just go to the level of tactics, writing another op-ed, you know, pointing out the inconsistencies and the damage that is being done here. We're wordsmiths, we're idea people, we present that, but this is not stopping. Mm-hmm. And we're reaching, I'm actually of the Flight 93 persuasion, where if we get Democrats controlling all the White House and Congress, it's going to go very, very badly. I share the concern, because I can imagine the justices that President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, would have selected. They would have made Sonia Sotomayor look very
like
moderate.
Sweet. Yeah.
Centrist.
Yes. So. Yeah, and that, I mean, I guess that comes down to the, I guess, the Trump bit of the essay. I was a never Trumper. I still recoil at his tweets that are, you know, insulting and so on and so forth. But my point is that he's there. He's not just in the U.S., but across the West. The people that conservative intellectuals claim to represent feel that sense of alarm, and they've thrown up these figures who are a bit, who stray from the merely proceduralist, merely autonomy-based line. They steer away from it. A bit, not even that much in some ways. But to treat that phenomenon and any attempt to kind of rethink the old consensus as anathema, as a threat to democracy itself, I think is a huge mistake for conservatives for the reasons you laid out. Trump, for example, on the trade issue, do you remember all the op-eds that his tariffs would bring us to 1930s, food lines and so on and so on? None of it happened.
Yeah.
You know, the economy, you know, and it took the mentality maybe of a kind of Queens developer, Queens-born Manhattan developer, to be like, hey, wait, what? We allow the Chinese with their surveillance state to build our infrastructure and our tech?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
You know, whereas the kind of expert class of conservatism would be like, yes, we tame China through the World Trade Organization, blah, 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 blah. Well, it wasn't working.
Yeah.
So a tiny bit of pushback on that arena, for example, which is far from the cultural stuff that we're talking about, and the kind of conservative intellectual class is just up in arms about it.
Well, when you were a never Trumper, did you believe that Rubio or Kasich could have won?
Yes.
You did believe that. Do you believe it now that they could have beaten Hillary? Michigan, Pennsylvania?
Maybe the Rubio of today.
Rubio's shifting, isn't he?
He's coming toward something. There are a few lawmakers, Rubio, Hawley Missouri, who are shifting towards something like common good conservatism that says, yes, the procedures have their place, but what is the end? What is the end of a polity? It's the common good of families, which makes up the common good of the overall political community.
Yeah.
So maybe the Rubio of today.
Yeah. They're politicians in the good sense of recognizing conditions are changing. I'm seeing something different here and I'm adjusting my views. On that, what you just said, when I hear progressives or liberals talk about diversity, 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 I say, diversity for what?
What ends?
They don't have an answer. Diversity for diversity. Mm-hmm. That's it. Because liberals don't want to pose ends like that, right? They just want to open things up.
I just want to note, I'm talking about in the realm of, we're talking Sohrab Ahmari, that Rubio presents a promising possibility, or Josh Hawley represents a promising possibility.
Right.
Not integralism, whatever that is.
Well this, and this was the claim, they say, Ahmari isn't really saying exactly what he wants.
I've been saying it for a while.
So that, yeah, a little adjustment in how we approach things. I'm not calling for, you know,
Catholic Sharia.
Catholic Sharia. So we're going to get you on record. You are not calling for Catholic Sharia?
I'm not calling for Catholic Sharia.
Okay. We're going to hold you to that.
And I don't think Pope Francis wants to rule you know, the United States. I think he's having trouble ruling his city-state.
Well, if you are calling for Catholic Sharia, you're not doing it very well. Because at the New York Post, you have columnists that include Frank Buckley,
Walter Olson of Cato.
Cato?
Jonah Goldberg.
Jonah Goldberg? You publish it.
Sometimes David French.
David French. So we
I'm a pretty bad Catholic Sharia.
You are operative. We got to get someone else in there. But meanwhile, what I hope you're moving forward on other questions Western culture has stopped asking. Give me one. Just as an anticipation.
Are you more moral than your ancestors?
I haven't heard that question.
Yeah. There's a lot of arguments that are made in our time as if the arrow of time itself ratifies ideas. Right? It's 2019. That itself is supposed to be a kind of morally valid statement. It's a kind of Hegelianism, but we don't even talk about Hegel anymore. But it's though just because we're in 2019, we must have debunked the late 19th century, or we must have debunked any other time, Augustine, Aristotle.
Haven't the millennials finally gotten it right? I mean, haven't they really solved all the moral, social questions? They've settled those, and now it's simply a time of instituting them.
Well,
properly.
What I would say is that,
I mean, that's what they tell me. That's what the millennials tell me.
I would say a certain subset of millennials, certainly in the conservative movement, of which I identify myself as a wider ferment, is at least beginning to ask some good questions. That's what, you know, the wider millennials, who knows? But what gives me hope is there's a lot of young millennials in the kind of conservative intellectual sphere who are questioning some aspects or all aspects of the old consensus.
Would you say more of them are National Review conservatives or Trump conservatives?
I wouldn't say, if you maybe remove Trump the Trump frame and say post-consensus conservatives,
yeah,
who are willing to at least wonder whether maximizing individual autonomy is the sole aim of a conservative.
Yeah.
If you pose it like that, I see a real ferment. A lot of it is online. A lot of it is in small circles of friends who write for places like First Things and so forth. But that's how movements begin.
So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll look forward to more from you.
Thank you.